You are Locked On Kings, your daily podcast on the Sacramento Kings.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to a very special bonus episode today of the Locked On Kings podcast. You heard my reactions to all of the moves that the Sacramento Kings made last night, right before and during the Houston Rockets trade. You've also heard my reactions to the Otto Porter trade, the Tobias Harris trade, but I figured you heard enough of me blabbing and you got to get some outside opinion as well. A good friend of mine, Sean Cunningham, does a fantastic job covering the Sacramento Kings and the NBA for ABC 10 here in Sacramento. And he was nice enough to take some time out of this absolutely chaotic day for everybody in sports media, not just here in Sacramento, to come on the Locked On Kings podcast and talk about not just the Kings moves, but all of the major moves that have happened around the NBA here for this special bonus episode of the Locked On Kings podcast. Sean, I hope you got more sleep than I did and some more food than I did here today, but I know you've been working your tail off.
Oh, Matt, I appreciate it. Yeah, I know we're in the thick of it, just having to, you know, I think we're all really difficult, not too sad to see this trade deadline pass and kind of let the dust settle. Finally, yeah, it was a whirlwind. I appreciate that. Always got time for you. But yeah, it's a pretty exciting times around here in the capital city.
Absolutely. And before we dive into the specifics of the trades that went down today, I've just been marveling at the fact that the Kings are in this position, something that we did not expect at all for this team to be such aggressive trade buyers that aren't looking just to add talent to bolster their future, but to help them in the immediate, help them right now in a very real and alive playoff race, is something that we didn't expect at all at the start of this season, certainly not at all going back to last summer. So even though we're working hard and going to press conferences and following all these rumors here in Sacramento, it's a better position to be in than sitting on the shelf watching everybody else have all the fun.
Oh, no question. And I had some people bring up, you know, 2 years ago when they were a game and a half out of the eighth seed and they pull the trigger to pretty much, you know, do the rebuild with the trade of DeMarcus Cousins, and be like, okay, well now look at them. They're making these trades to actually go for it. And I think the huge difference there is, obviously, I mean, aside from the obvious that DeMarcus Cousins was looking at making a max contract in the offseason and becoming a max player, much like John Wall, which Washington is probably regretting at the moment, having a contract that enormous on their roster. But looking at these guys and say, hey, you're playing with some house money here. These guys are likely exceeding expectations. I know in talking to people before the season started, I asked them a year. I was asking folks a year from September, October, if we're meeting again a year from now, how do you measure success? What has to happen for this to be working?
Yeah.
And playoffs were never really mentioned. Playoffs weren't nearly on the radar. It was, to them, they felt they needed to have one or two guys show the potential of being a star, show that they're capable of being a star. And I kind of scoffed at that. And I said, looking at the roster, you've got a Marvin Bagley, who I think can project that way. De'Aaron Fox, who can project that way. Not so sure what Harry Giles could be. Had to see if he could even play the game, right? Hadn't seen him in NBA action at that point. But I kind of scoffed and went, dude, you really think you can get that in a year and know that by in a year? And they were very confident in saying, yes, we do. We absolutely think that we can have a guy make that incremental leap. Well, I think they were right. I mean, look at what the season that Buddy Hield has had, and even De'Aaron Fox, and here you have Marvin Bagley, who's shown some really impressive things as a rookie. You see these glimmers, and it obviously reflects in the win-loss total. And I think because of that, they want to snap the streak. They want to snap the no playoffs since 06 streak that's been plaguing Sacramento for all this time. It's made them such a laughingstock. I used to laugh. I mean, you know as good as I do, Matt, half the teams in the Western Conference make the playoffs, and you haven't been in the upper echelon, the upper half, since 2006. That's just crazy. So
right,
for them to actually do this and hopefully springboard the development of these guys and give them opportunities to play not only in games that are helping them develop and earn this toughness and earn this experience, but play in meaningful basketball games. If you can get a playoff series this year, you know how crazy this series will be. And oh, by the way, likely against a team like the Warriors, maybe Denver, but I think everyone it would probably agree that it would likely be the Dodgers. I'm a Giants fan, sorry, I didn't mean to say Dodgers. I hate the Dodgers, but it could be the Warriors. I mean, that would be incredible. It's never happened. Those teams have never played each other in the playoffs, and how exciting would that be?
And on top of that, you have the extra side of things now that the Kings have acquired Harrison Barnes, that he would go against his former team. And, of course, DeMarcus Cousins is with the Golden State Warriors. He would be going against his former team in the Sacramento Kings, which there I'm sure will be the narrative there of DeMarcus was never able to lead this team to the playoffs. But here they are with the young core of De'Aaron Fox, Marvin Bagley and company. So there would be storylines galore. And based off of the way that the Kings have played the Warriors so far throughout this season, it certainly would lead to probably some very entertaining basketball, and that possibility is there, and that's how the Kings approach this trade deadline. And a lot of teams, you know, approach this trade deadline in very different and interesting ways, Sean. And we're not going to touch on all the trades that happened today because there are just so many to go through. We'd be here for 5-6 hours. But I want to talk about really some of the major ones, and I'm going to do my best to go in chronological order. This one happened a little while
ago. Actually, Matt, can I cut you off?
Yeah, please.
Just because we both sat in this press conference with Vlade, and I'm actually standing in that room right now as we speak still. And I'd be curious to get your take, because I asked Vlade right at the end about, more bluntly, more directly of a question, because it had come up about the expectations he might have to make the playoffs. And he turned that around on me and said, do I think? And I said, well, I haven't even seen these guys play yet. You obviously have pulled the trigger. You're waiving Ben McLemore. You have now two roster slots that are available. Because I had asked, like, you know, you make these moves, do you have an idea of what you still need? And he says, no, he was pretty blunt. He said, no, I think we can make it. I think we can, you know, make the playoffs at this point. Do you see that in them?
I do.
I think a lot has to do with also the Clippers obviously doing what they did, correct?
Right.
I mean, that's the way I look at it.
Well, that too, and if the Lakers are going to try and find a way to get that unit to play together, and is playoff LeBron going to show up pre-playoffs just to get his team there? I think there are a lot of factors to it, but specifically based off this roster, and the reason why I hesitate is I'm battling the optimist side with the realist side, and the optimist side of me is ready to project this team is going to be a playoff team, and while I have fun with that, the realist in me is looking at this roster and thinking, okay, you've gotten better, you've improved, you did enough to hang around at least to this point in the season. Now you've added talent on top of that I believe is enough to break through. Honestly, I believe in this roster and their ability to get there. I just don't know what the Clippers are going to be, and especially what the Lakers are going to be. I have a very hard time picturing and accepting a NBA playoffs without LeBron James in some way, shape, or form. So you have to figure the Lakers are going to make some kind of push and make some kind of run and figure it out here in these final 29 games or so. But my gut tells me this is a playoff team. I know they have enough talent to be a playoff team. However, I hesitate, and what I got from you asking that question of Vlade, Sean, was he turned it back around on you, and I read into that he was more saying, you know, I think I've done everything I can to put us on the best possible path as of right now in this case without ruining any of our future or mortgaging any of our future. But still, like you said earlier, the Kings are gambling with house money here. If they make the playoffs, great. If not, it doesn't mean it's not a successful season.
No, and I completely agree with that. I think if I'm Vlade, if they don't make the playoffs, I don't think it's that huge of a disappointment, to be honest.
Yeah.
One thing I'm looking at it is, obviously he talked about Barnes, and he led off with the fact of we hope to have a long future with him. I mean, they're looking at him beyond just the 1 year that he has. Obviously, he has a player option for next year, and he's looking for some security going forward.
Right.
So that makes sense. I'll tell you this, the concerns that I have. First of all, I'll start with the positives. You added length. How many times have we heard Dave Yeager say, they just shoot right over the top of us.
Yep.
We don't have girth. We don't have length. You have that now. I mean, you've got a 6'6" guard in Alec Burks, and you've got a guy in Harrison Barnes that can shoot over pretty much anybody. My concern, though, and look, you have to take risks. You have to make moves to you have to spend money to make money, right?
Right.
The concern is, and I think what people really loved about Amon Shumpert, especially, I shouldn't say people, because fans, they have their reasons, and obviously he was a quirky, original, fun guy. But he also brought a toughness. He brought a mentality to that locker room, much like a Garrett Temple, but I'd say even more so, because you know, Garrett's a very polished athlete. Shump is a real one, right? Like Chris Paul called him a dog. He's got some dog in him. There's a mantra that goes with that. Mm-hmm. Shump was a solid defender, but he was even more so. It's the toughness that he brought, the togetherness that he brought into that locker room, the fun he injected into that locker room. These guys loved him. So there's no statistic, analytic. You can't put money on chemistry, so you don't have to measure that. But you're adding to – you also said goodbye to Justin Jackson, who was probably, along with Shumpert, probably your two best on-ball defenders and probably your best perimeter defender. I thought Justin Jackson was the best perimeter defender they had, period.
Yeah.
I like De'Aaron Fox. I'd probably say De'Aaron Fox is probably their best defender, bar none. But sometimes De'Aaron Fox has to wait for that light to go on. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Whereas those guys, they're because of where they are in the rotation when they were here with the Kings, they were treated – a little bit differently. You had to kind of fight for your minutes. De'Aaron Fox kind of had his minutes on a silver platter for him. So, I think the one thing that those are my concerns, toughness. And I think, you know, that defense, which has already been terrible for this team anyway, but they had a guy who can stretch the floor. People wonder why Nemanja Bjelica is still, you know, a starter. And that's for that reason. They need to be able to stretch the floor. They have to have a guy that can stretch the floor. Harrison Barnes can do that.
You ended up taking it in a different direction than where I thought you were going, because a lot of fans are concerned with the loss of Iman Shumpert and the effect that might have on the chemistry of this team inside the locker room, the leadership, and I was all prepared to counter you on that with two major things, and these are discussions that I've had with multiple members of the media today, with my colleagues here at Sports 1140 KHDK, is that first and foremost, if this team falls apart and collapses because a locker room leader like Iman Shumpert has been taken away from this team, I question their ability to be a playoff team in the future. I question whether they are as good of a team as they've shown, if they can be that affected by essentially what was a role player. Now, I'm not trying to take anything away from Iman Shumpert, but the fact that he's starting on this team, he probably doesn't start on 28 or 29 other teams in the NBA, but the Kings used him in a specific role, and to his credit, he played very well in that role. My other counter to that would be, and the reason why I'm bringing that up is because I'm wondering if you feel the same way, Sean. You have now had four veterans come through this locker room. You still have one there in Costa Kufos, but you've had four amazing veterans come through this locker room in Vince Carter, Garrett Temple, Iman Shumpert, and Zach Randolph that have given guys like De'Aaron Fox a couple of years of opportunity to learn what being a leader in the NBA is all about. If De'Aaron hasn't picked up anything from each of those four guys over the last 2 years, and now he can apply that as the floor general and in-game leader of this team, that makes me question how good De'Aaron Fox can be. My point is, I think De'Aaron, Buddy Hield, the guys that have been in the locker room over the past couple of years should have learned enough from those four vets to be ready to step into their shoes and take over that leadership role.
Yeah, and I see what you're saying, but you're also looking at it in hearing you say it that way, you're looking at it strictly from a basketball standpoint.
Sure.
There's intangibles. Think of De'Aaron Fox. De'Aaron Fox shares an agent with Iman Shumpert, so that's a lot of agencies consider themselves family. And oh, by the way, he lockered right next to his best friend in Justin Jackson, outside of Malik Monk. Justin Jackson, someone who comes from the same, grew up in Houston with him. You know, they've known each other since they were kids. They're really close. So, yeah, there is a sting. I do feel that, yes, that where there is the human element, and yeah, this does sting, and this could potentially disrupt some of that chemistry that could take a while to develop and maybe get back to what maybe this team is used to. It's a dynamic that's within guys in the locker room and how they get along. We're not talking about how that doesn't necessarily, I think one influences the other. While you're looking more, it's on the, you said like with Shumpert, yeah, he was a starter. He started on this team, but yeah, you spot minutes. He wasn't like what De'Aaron Fox is. I get all that. But what I'm talking about and talking to these players over the past couple days is the intangible the guy brings to the locker room. And I'll give you a perfect example, Matt.
Perfect.
For all we're talking about with Shumpert, Zach Randolph, who hasn't played all year, Justin Jackson, think of Frank Mason. Frank Mason is a guy who obviously fights for his minutes. He gets to practice with this team. Harry Giles last year. These guys have had – Harry Giles didn't play last year and had such a dramatic impact on the culture of this team. Frank Mason is right up there with Shumpert, and you can go right down the line, ask every one of them. Everyone's going to say 1A is Shumpert. 1B in terms of who has a direct influence on the culture of this locker room is Frank Mason. And he's not a guy that plays all that often. So, I mean, you just, it's just one of those things. There's no analytic for chemistry, and it is something to be concerned with, but that's why these guys make a lot of money. They have to make it work. You rip a guy who can be really the heart and soul out of your locker room, and it may not go the way you like it based off of, you look at numbers and what they can do on other teams. Guys can oftentimes be products of their environment. So we'll see. I think I'm over dramatizing a little bit, only because I think it's not going to have this lasting lingering effect. I think these guys are professional. I think they're young enough to know, even though they're young enough to be stung by something like this, they're old enough to know and that this is the business that they're in, and there's still expectations. You still make a ton of money to go out there and play a game, and that's what they're going to be expected to do. And I think, you know, being able to play tomorrow night immediately with Harrison Barnes and Alec Burks, day one, we'll see them start to build that chemistry, and hopefully the results on the basketball court will bear fruit. But yeah, I mean, the locker room thing, that's almost where it starts with every team, is that those intangibles, that culture within a locker room.
You were in the locker room with me last night following the game, and regardless of what the final score was, even if the Kings had found a way to win that game, I still think it would have been a kind of a solemn place and a place of a little bit of sadness. And we got very different spectrums of player frustration and their willingness to discuss it. On one hand, Willie Cauley-Stein, who always wears his emotions on his sleeve, did not shy away from expressing his feelings, his frustration, telling us that he found out only or not too long before the start of the game, and he said something along the lines of, that's trash, but that's the business. And he appeared and sounded audibly and visibly upset as to how everything went down. And then you look at the other side of the spectrum, Buddy Hield, who I thought stepped up as a leader, at least in the post-game press conferences there, where he said, you know, it's a sour taste in our mouth, but we'll get over it. We'll be ready to play. We're excited to welcome Harrison and Alec in with open arms. So I was really impressed by Buddy's element of that. We're probably going to get to a point, Sean, where we're going to see who can really step up and be that leader and who's ready to take on that torch or that mantle and who's quite not ready for that. And this is a young team overall. So I guess my question to you with everything, with all that is this something that you expect to linger beyond this Miami game and maybe into the remainder of this homestand? Or is this something you expect once they take the floor on Friday, it should be dealt with?
I don't think it'll be immediate. I don't think it'll be even, I think it might be a little sterile at first. And that's not to say they won't have success on the basketball court, but really enjoying what they have, the environment, the culture. And I only say that because you're so close to the All-Star break where you have, I think it's, if I'm not mistaken, two more games at home and then Denver. Is that right? So Miami,
yes.
Phoenix, and then Denver, right? Okay, so Denver's on the road. And then you go into the All-Star break, and that's a week or so process. So many guys going to Charlotte, they're only going to get a lot of the, if you're a guy that's gone to Charlotte, you're only going to really have one day off.
Yeah.
Cause those players that are going to Charlotte for All-Star weekend will leave directly from Dallas and go to Charlotte.
Yep.
So the All-Star break where you think, oh, some guys go to Cancun, some guys go to Tahiti, they need to go and, you know, or they just stay on their couch the entire time. It's going to be pretty busy for some of these guys. Mm-hmm. So most of these guys, if the guys that are going to the All-Star break, to the All-Star game and all their festivities and that weekend in Charlotte, they're going to get one day off. Everybody else will hopefully be able to be with family, rest, relax, regroup. So they're all going their separate ways is what I'm saying. So you don't have that intimacy. I think this team needs to get on the road, kind of experience each other, learn each other, find the guys that obviously Yogi Ferrell and Harrison Barnes played with each other. Caleb Swanigan is a guy who's very familiar to a lot of these young players because they played college circuits and AAUs together. So there will be some familiarity. But how do you build on that? A lot of times, what's the old saying? Sometimes trying times will bring you closer together. That needs to happen. So no, I don't expect it to necessarily happen overnight. But it might take a little bit of a little while. But I don't want to misconstrue that with the success on the court. I could see this team. It's very capable that this team could go out there, win both of their next two of their next three games, go into the All-Star break feeling pretty good, and people think the culture is in the lock and the chemistry is just fine, and that could very well not be the case. Although I think at the end of the day, all the people care about is what the product on the court is. But some of these things do influence what on the court happens, and I think that's one of the things that has made this team so successful. So it's a risk. It was a calculated risk. I'm not saying I wouldn't have done the trade. I actually think they did get better from a basketball standpoint. But they're to say that this is just going to be a no-brainer and it's going to work, I don't sign up for that at all.
Well, Sean, you and I, we can talk Kings basketball all day long, and normally we would here on the Locked On Kings podcast, but there's so much else that happened around the NBA that I want to try and touch on as quickly as possible here and fit in as much as we can. Let's start with the Otto Porter trade. I was going to start with the Kristaps Porzingis trade, but that feels like it was too long ago. We think it was a good trade for Dallas. I think we can agree, and the New York Knicks are taking quite a risk, and it's going to be interesting to track what they do and who they're able to attract this summer, if anybody at all, or it might cost Scott Perry his job. But the Washington Wizards have put out this smokescreen for the last couple months that they're not trading Otto Porter. They're going to try and keep their big three together. And it was all hogwash, and I think we all saw right through it from the very beginning because of their financial situation. It seemed like they were just trying to jockey for better position to see if they could steal a piece or two away from the Sacramento Kings, get them to overpay a little bit or not have to pay as little as the Kings in their current power position could have gotten away with. Rumors had it they wanted Giles or Bogdanovich. The Kings weren't willing to part from it, which I think is the absolute right move. And then they ended up trading Otto Porter to the Chicago Bulls for Bobby Portis and Jabari Parker. To me, that feels like a panic move. Like the Kings stiffed them, said no, and then they realized, oh God, we got to dump this salary in some way, shape, or form. Bulls, give us this, and we'll get it done. Did that feel the same way for you?
The only thing I took from that was that the Kings obviously didn't value Otto Porter nearly as much as maybe some people thought they might. Obviously, Otto Porter's skill set provides something that they need, but I think that at that position, they wanted someone that could shoot the ball, and that's pretty evident by what they just did with Harrison Barnes. I think Porter's contract, just because you have the money doesn't mean you need to spend the money. Yeah. I mean, I think everyone would agree that Otto Porter is vastly overpaid for what he provides. And I use, you know, this might be the Duke fan in me, but I use an example with Justice Winslow. Justice Winslow is almost the same player. A lot of times has to act as a point guard for the Miami Heat. Not a great shooter by any stretch, but has improved. He can knock down a corner three, but does every little thing that basically Otto Porter does, and makes $13 million a year. So, you know, I think that they were interested in Porter to a degree, but like you said, if Harry Giles were on the table, that was a non-starter. So to see them then move to Chicago and settle for a deal with Portis and Jabari Parker, who, let's face it, we don't know if the guy can ever play again and be what he was. I think that spoke volumes, but you were right. I mean, you hit it right on the head. I mean, everyone knew that Washington was going to have to make a move, and especially with John Wall's contract kicking in next year, it's just not something you could do. And obviously, now that John Wall has not only the injury that he was dealing with, but then an Achilles, and is likely going to miss all of next year, you were definitely going to keep Bradley Beal because you need that scoring threat. So that made Otto Porter expendable. Right. They're just in salary cap hell over there. And I think the Kings were very diligent. I think I can't fault the Wizards for looking at options and saying, hey, we want to get Bogey and Giles. Kings have that problem too. There's guys they love that, guess what, their team loves them too. So good for the Kings for not pulling the trigger. I commend them for that because I think that even though it's a deal that you were willing to do 2 years ago based off the roster that you had when you signed Otto Porter to an offer sheet that obviously the Wizards matched. 2 years in, sometimes you can feel a different way based off of the makeup of your team. Even though you still had a need for a small forward, at that point you go, does his production match the money that we have? Can we better suit our money elsewhere and find somebody better? And I think they did that. I think they realized they needed a player that'll stretch the floor, and Otto Porter's not one of them. I mean, that's kind of going back to the Bielitsa thing. I remember talking to Dave Yeager at one point, and I was like, oh, how nice is it to have a guy that can stretch the floor like this? He goes, well, yeah, but good teams have three of those guys.
Right.
And so now you've got two. You've got two players with size that can stretch the floor. Hopefully Harry Giles can become that player. Or do they, you know, Alec Burks can maybe be that guy as well, but we'll see. I think I commend them for not making that move. I don't think what they got from Chicago was garbage in any sense. I mean, look, the biggest thing was getting him off your team, getting that money off your team and bringing back some talent. And they have talent there. Hopefully Jabari Parker can turn into the guy that he once was, or at least become 70 to 80% of what he once was and have some playing time and see what he can develop into. And Portis is a hell of a player. So I think I don't laugh at that. I think they had to do that move. I don't make fun of them for that. I think Kings fans look at that and go, wait a minute, that's all it took. And, you know, if that's what Washington likes, somebody like Giles and Bogey, well, then you don't have a deal.
What about this the Tobias Harris trade that went down with the Los Angeles Clippers? Really not just that. The Clippers were extremely active here at the trade deadline, and for the most part, it appears like they were sellers. They also traded away Avery Bradley today, who's one of their key wing defenders and an important piece to their team. They ended up waiving Marcin Gortat earlier on today and acquired a couple other role players as well. They still, though, have Lou Williams. They still have Montrezl Harrell. They still have Patrick Beverley. They still have Doc Rivers as their head coach, so they're still talent there in LA, but I'm expecting them to fall out of that eighth seed. I don't think they're going to be able to hold on to it with the Kings and the Lakers really nipping at their heels pretty hard here and making some probably pretty desperate pushes as we come down to the final stretch. Do you think they're going to be able to hold on to that eighth seed, or do you expect them to drop out as well?
No, they're dropping out, and that was the whole inspiration behind making those moves. They definitely don't want to contend for the playoffs. I think they wanted to send the right message based off the hot start that they had, but they fully expected at the start of the season not to make the playoffs because there's some provisions on their draft pick, and they wanted to free up room to be able to make the run at the likes of Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard, and be a major player in this free agency period. So there was no reason to think that they're going to make the playoffs, and I think that was evidenced by that trade. I love the Tobias Harris pickup for Philly, though.
Yeah.
I think Philly did a hell of a thing. Even them cutting bait with Markelle Fultz, you know, hopefully he can get his game and his life together. But even bringing in somebody like Jonathan Simmons, who could provide a real good spark for them, I really love what Philly does. Philly just became a player. They were already a really good team, and they got better. And I really love that addition. And I think, you know, Tobias Harris is such a great player. I thought he should have been an All-Star. His free agency period, I think, is going to be one to pay attention to this offseason.
And I want to build upon that, Sean, because I think you absolutely are correct. And one of the things I loved about this trade deadline is the fact that we saw a lot of talent go to the Eastern Conference. And I think that's fantastic for the NBA. That's fantastic for basketball. I said initially, I think it's a really thick and interesting three-team race in the West, or in the East, rather. I think I was selling the Boston Celtics a little short. They still have a lot of talent there. But between the Boston Celtics and having the core that they have, and they didn't make any moves, unless I'm mistaken here, at the trade deadline, you have the Philadelphia 76ers that now have a big four, and they look stacked. You have the Bucks, who are playing phenomenal with Antetokounmpo, and they just got Mirotić for and shipped off Thon Maker. And then you have the Toronto Raptors, who just got Mark Gasol are at this trade deadline here. Granted, they had to give up Valanciunas, who I think was a great piece for them and an important piece for them. But these four teams are going to be going to war for the opportunity to probably play the Warriors in the NBA Finals. That's got to be great for the NBA and exciting for the casual and Eastern Conference NBA fan.
Yeah, you can't just put Toronto in the Eastern Conference Finals, or even Boston for that matter. You've got some legit competition now. And rightfully so. I think that's going to make the NBA more healthy, add a little bit more to a little more dynamic to what can potentially take form. But I also think, Matt, look at what Denver's doing. It's kind of happening in the West as well. You know, Houston's lingering. Denver, what they've been able to accomplish, and see Michael Malone go and coach his first All-Star game with the best record in the league. I mean, that speaks volumes. I think more teams you have that can give a team like the Warriors a run for their money. Look, it could still end up being, and probably will be, you can just pencil them in right now as the champions. But it'll be fun to watch it play out. I think casual fans can and do get a lot of entertainment and seeing these. And you know, that's the funny thing about the playoffs. Even though it doesn't happen that often, we have seen historically a team get upset, and you're looking at it, you know, you'd rather have less odds than no odds. So
right,
go ahead and try and shock the world. I think it'll be good. I think, and again, you know, there's teams that are trending so much higher than where they were just weeks ago. And the Kings are kind of one of them. And I think that's a fun thing to have happen. The season is so long, and you still have what, 25, 20 games left with some teams. A lot can happen, injuries, all this stuff. So Teams are gearing up, and I think it's going to make for a really interesting final couple months of the season.
I'm not going to ask you to put money down on any of it, but if I was to tell you or get from you your pick for out of the West or Eastern Conference with those four juggernauts, and there's still other four other teams that are going to be in the playoff picture down there, but who you would expect to come out and make it through and really pose a threat for the NBA in the NBA Finals?
You're talking about for the East, who I think will emerge from the East?
Correct.
Ooh.
See, I'm the exact same way. Someone asked me that same question, Sean, and I had the exact same reaction. About 48 hours ago, I would have said, oh, I think it's going to be the Toronto Raptors. But now that with the Philadelphia 76ers, what they've added on paper out of the four teams, I think they're the most talented.
I think I got to see what happens with the buyout market, see where some of these guys end up. I think there's talent out there that can definitely help a team that's on the brink or on the cusp of trying to do something. If I've got a gun to my head, here's the thing. Here's what I'm thinking. Like, you know, I know the Celtics haven't had a great season, right? It's been up and down, blah, blah, blah. But it only takes a couple weeks to make things kind of click again.
Right.
And now that the trade deadline has passed, Brad Stevens is one hell of a coach. I could very easily see that team kind of figure it out and get it together. I'm going to be honest, that would not surprise me. And then you put them in a series. You just put them in a series with the likes of Philly, who, you know, for all intents and purposes, is still pretty young and still trying. You know, Jimmy Butler is there and gives them a great spark. Now you got Tobias. That's all got to kind of work. How's that going to work? Brett Brown's got to figure that out. So I could see it kind of. You know, I could see Boston getting in there and upsetting one of those teams if they were to play. But I think of a gun to my head, I think I just have to go with Toronto, just because they've been there so many times and there's no LeBron James in the East.
Yeah.
So LeBron James seems to always spell the end of their season. Even though DeMar DeRozan's gone, I think that if I had to pick one of those teams, I'd probably right now I would pick Toronto.
Well, one thing's for sure, we are absolutely guaranteed it's going to be very entertaining and must-watch television here for the final few months of the season heading into the playoffs. Hopefully the Kings are involved in the playoffs in the West. We'll have our eyes locked on the Eastern Conference to see what shakes up there with the buyout market. I'm sure a lot of teams, including the Kings, might be active as the Kings have two open roster spots. And if you need to track everything that the Kings are doing, Sean Cunningham is a fantastic follow at Sean Cunningham on Twitter, but also you can check out all of his fantastic work on ABC 10. Sean, thank you so much for taking this big chunk of time out of your extremely busy day to come on this bonus podcast. I certainly appreciate it, and I look forward to having you back on very soon.
Matt George, anytime. You know that. I got time. We can always do it again. I look forward to it, and I can just tell you, exclusive, I saw Alec Burks walk by a minute ago. So as the Miami Heat are about to take a walkthrough here, they have arrived as well. I saw Alec Burks. He's in the building. So it'll be fun. Looks like it'll be fun to see those guys take the floor tomorrow night.
There were pictures not too long ago of both Alec and Harrison Barnes arriving together at the Sacramento International Airport as well. So the new guys are in town, and hopefully they can bring some good mojo with them and help this team make the playoffs and end that long playoff drought. And then, Sean, we can finally say it wasn't your fault anymore. You can cover a Kings playoff team, and it'll be fantastic.
I'd like to take that away. You know, I'd like to get that off of my shoulders. That'd be great.
What if, I mean, the way media works, I just have this horrible scenario in my head of the equivalent of ABC trading you, or you get a new position or a new job in LA or something, and this is the year the Kings make the playoffs.
It's happened, man. I mean, I was fortunate enough to, you know, I think I mentioned you before, to cover in a year span, a Super Bowl, NBA Finals, World Series, and Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's guys that go forever and not be able to cover one of those. So, it's been a blast. I'd like to see it happen, you know, as a guy who grew up in Sacramento rooting for the Kings and then ultimately covering them. You'd love to see that. You'd love to see them have that success. And it's been just far too long. You know, you get kind of antsy to do it. And luckily I've had been able to cover the Warriors to kind of scratch that itch, but I want to see it in this town because I know the environment this town gets in playoff basketball, and it should be fun. I've never seen a building louder than when the Sonics came back, or I'm sorry, when the Kings came back from the Sonics, or when the Kings beat the Mavericks to go to the Western Conference Finals. I'd never seen a building that loud, and that nothing compares to that.
Well, hopefully we can get that back here in Sacramento. True true fact here, and this may surprise a lot of people, I have never, ever, ever been, in all my time being a Sacramento Kings fan and growing up during the glory years, I have never been to an NBA playoff game, a Sacramento Kings playoff game, anything, and I've avoided going to cover the Warriors or anything like that because I've wanted my first playoff opportunity and playoff experience to be in Sacramento when it finally happens. So hopefully this can be the year for that. One thing's guaranteed, though, it'll be an amazing experience.
Oh, you got that right. Yeah, it'll be fantastic. And let's see if it happens. I think most people probably feeling upbeat and excited. We just did a Facebook Live on ABC10's Facebook page, and all the comments there, people were pretty energized about where this team is. But I thought that also existed before the trade deadline.
Yeah.
So it'll be fun. It'll be fun, Matt.
Absolutely. Well, if the Kings do make the postseason, of course, we will be previewing it and talking about it all over the Locked On Kings podcast. Sean, we'll definitely have to have you back for that, and I'm sure you'll have great coverage of the remainder of the season on ABC10. So keep up the great work, my friend.
Appreciate you. Anytime, man.
You are Locked On Kings, your daily Sacramento Kings podcast.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.